Christ is risen, and no one saw it coming. Christ is risen, and it has caught everyone off guard. Christ is risen. But even those who had been closest to the experience of his life could not believe that his extraordinary aliveness could break free once he had succumbed to the all-conquering power of death. You often hear it said that the only thing certain in life are death and taxes, and sure enough, everybody has an unshakable faith in the power of death. When Jesus was laid lifeless in the tomb, even his closest friends had far more faith in the power of death than they did in God's ability to fulfill what Jesus had said about rising to life on the third day. Our faith in death is absolute. Our faith in life and our faith in God tend to be far more fragile. This group of women who came out to the tomb on the Sunday morning were not saying, well, hopefully he's not there anymore because he'll be risen just like he said, but we'll take the embalming spices just in case. They weren't thinking like that. Their faith in death was absolute. And when they reported back to the rest of his disciples that his body was gone and they'd been told he had risen, none of the other disciples believed them either. Their faith in the power of death was absolute too. Why did they not believe it when Jesus had said it so many times? Why were they not expecting something like this? Well, actually, we do this kind of thing all the time. We hear something, but it kind of slides through our consciousness without making any impact on our thinking because there is simply nothing in our existing frameworks or ways of thinking for it to latch onto and take root. So we hear it, but we don't really hear it at all. If we register it at all, we register it as something that we don't really understand, which we might get back to later if we get some more information that will help us make sense of it and work out what to do with it. Jesus' words about the resurrection were a lot like that. It wasn't that nobody believed in resurrection. Jewish faith of that day did include belief in a resurrection, but it was the final resurrection of all the dead at once that would mark the end of time as we knew it. The resurrection of one person, while the rest of the world went on with its business seemingly unchanged, simply did not compute. It could not be anticipated in terms of their existing belief in the resurrection, and it had no other precedent or reference point to enable them to grasp it. It was simply unimaginable, unthinkable, impossible. Our inability to compute what is going on is perhaps even more profound when it comes to the implications of the resurrection of Jesus for the living of our own lives. And this is what the Apostle Paul was grappling with in the passage that we heard read from his letter to the Romans. He's trying to break through our incomprehension. Do you not know, he says? Do you not get this? Do you not comprehend that in baptism you were buried with the Messiah into his death, so that now too you are united with him in his resurrection life? Do you not get this, he says? Well, actually, no. For the most part, we don't get it. Mostly it seems to us like the abstract ponderings of crusty old theologians. Not something we can kind of latch onto and get excited about and find our lives radically changed by. But Paul is desperately trying to break through and enable us to encounter it as something more than that, as something every bit as shocking and bewildering as the resurrection itself. And here tonight, in a few minutes, we are going to be renewing our baptismal vows, and three people are going to be asking us to accept them into the membership of this congregation on the basis of their confirmation of their baptismal vows. And so I want to just for a minute here join with the apostle in trying to break this concept free from the tomb of incomprehensible theology, so that we might be able to begin to be as startled and excited and transformed by it as those who first encountered the risen Christ. The crunch issue that Paul is trying to get through to us is how the resurrection changes our relationship to sin, to our patterns of participation in the ways of rivalry and jealousy and selfishness and hostility and divisiveness and destruction. And in summing it up, he says, "So then, you must reckon yourselves dead to sin and alive to God in Christ Jesus." And the word that he uses here that's translated as reckon is actually a word that comes from accountancy, believe it or not. It might also be translated as calculate or tally up. And his point is that we often continue to live as though sin had some ongoing authority over us because we haven't yet calculated the implications of what has happened to us in our immersion with Christ into his death and resurrection. So it's a bit like a shopkeeper adding up the takings at the end of the day, because the adding up does not make any difference to the takings. They are what they are, counted or uncounted. But the reckoning of them does change what the shopkeeper can now do. Now he knows what he can afford to do next. And so too, our reckoning of the consequences of our solidarity with Christ in his resurrection will enable us to realize the startling truth of what is now possible as people over whom the forces of death and sin no longer have any ultimate authority. Try thinking of it this way. Some of you have known people who have spent time in jail. Many of those who are jailed for some years find themselves so institutionalized by the experience that after their release, the only way they can cope is to continue to live as though they were still inside. Now take that image a step further and imagine that you are a prisoner. And for years, a particularly nasty and vindictive prison guard bullies you and victimizes you. And because his authority inside is absolute, there's nothing you can do but submit to it and endure it as best you can. And so for years, you live in constant fear of this brutal tyrant, and you resentfully obey every petty order that he gives in order to minimize the abuse. But then one day, you're released and you're free. And finally, the abuse is at an end. And you return home much relieved and begin a new life. But then one day there's a knock at the door, and when you open it, your old tormentor, the prison guard, barges into your house and begins pushing you around again. Now, Paul is warning us that most of us are facing pretty much exactly that situation. And that from fear and habit and inability to imagine an alternative, we have capitulated again and reverted to the old habits of allowing him to push us around, even though now we are in a place where he has no real authority, only what he can dupe us into giving him. So reckon yourselves dead to sin and alive to God in Christ Jesus, says the apostle. Or in other words, stand up to the bully because he doesn't have any authority over you anymore. Calculate the implications of the new situation. In this new place, the tyrant can only get away with terrorizing you if you let him. You've been set free. You are alive in Christ, sharing in the resurrection life over which sin and death have no authority at all. Throw the bully out and live the life of freedom. And yes, that idea is as radical and incomprehensible as the resurrection of Jesus from the dead. In fact, the whole gospel of Jesus is virtually incomprehensible to the world that we live in. because we've been so institutionalized to a world where the systems grind on relentlessly, dividing us into categories of good and bad, clean and unclean, acceptable and unacceptable, and nothing good ever comes to anyone without being earned or qualified for. And once gained, everything must be fiercely guarded because there's never enough to go round and someone will surely try to take it off us. We've been so institutionalized by that view, that the gospel of God's extravagant and inexhaustible love and grace freely poured out for everyone with no distinctions of gender or race or religion or sexuality or even deservedness or past behaviours has trouble finding any precedent or reference point to latch onto and take root in our minds. We can easily hear it without really hearing it, and remain completely uncomprehending of the exhilarating implications of freedom and new life. Excuse me. But we're here tonight because Christ is risen, and because we have been raised with him. And we're here tonight because we are hungry to taste the almost unimaginable implications of that, to reckon the meaning and to rise to the fullness of the life that Christ has won for us. So come, let us keep the feast.